Thanks for being here today. My name is Kevin Conover. I'm your host on the Educate for Life program. We're broadcasting down here in Southern California on KPRZ 1210 AM, as well as FM 106.1 in North County. And then, of course, we're podcasts on Google Podcasts and all the different podcasts that are available. And we're also on YouTube. So we have a great program this evening. I'm really excited. You know, my background is apologetics. And I'm an apologetics teacher. I've been doing this for 16 years now. A lot of fun. I'm in the middle of it. I'm still alive, a full-time teacher. Right now, I'm teaching at a Christian high school. I teach 12th graders apologetics. And I'm emphasizing the importance of being able to defend what you believe in and being able to communicate effectively about what you believe in. And this is really critical. And I go to homeschool conventions all over the country. And one of the conventions I was at, actually not too long ago, in Arizona, I had a young man come up to the table. And one of the ways I always start conversations with people is I say, if somebody asked you how you know the Bible is true, what would your response be? What would you say? And frequently, a lot of kids kind of stumble around and they have a very difficult time with that question. And they're kind of looking for answers. And then we get into a great discussion. But every once in a while, a young man or woman will give me some answers that are real impressive that I'm like, wow, somebody's been educating you. And that's what happened here with Elijah Walker. He came up to my table and started talking to me and gave me some really good answers. So, and his sister's name is Caitlin. I've just recently got to meet her. And you guys, thanks for a lot for being on the show today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So Elijah, I just wanted to start off with that question, you know, the same question I asked you at the convention there in Arizona, AFHE. And if somebody asked you, how do you know that the Bible is true? What are some of the answers that you would give them to give them confidence that the Bible is true?
So immediately what comes to mind when I'm asked that question is, first off, I know that there's a God because I look around at this world and I see there has to be a designer. And so from there, you say, okay, there are so many people's ideas about God. And then you can look to Islam, you can look to Mormonism, but the one that sticks out is Christianity, because in the Bible, we can see, first off, there are no contradictions in the Bible. And this book was written over many years, many languages, many different authors. However, it doesn't contradict itself. It maintains a consistency. And the reason for that is that one God that we know exists used man to write what he wanted conveyed. And so I look at the Bible and I see, hey, I can trust in this word, meaning I can trust in the God it presents, which is Yahweh. Additionally, there's so much historical evidence, and always the Bible, time and time again, is affirmed in every aspect. And so those are just a few of the reasons why I know the Bible is true.
I love it. I love it. That's so fantastic. Yeah. And that's what caused me to take an interest in Elijah. I was like, hey, what in the world? Where did he get these answers from? Elijah, how old are you?
I just turned 17.
Yeah, there you go. So, right. At a young age, already you'd be able to give pretty concrete reasons why you believe the Bible. And what I found out from him was that he is a part of a speech and debate team. And he said, this is how I've done it. And correct me if I'm wrong, Elijah. I think you said to me that you actually were engaged in debate over apologetic issues. Is that correct?
Sometimes. The debate topics usually deal with societal issues. However, outside of a round, I've definitely gotten into individual debates with people about apologetic issues.
Mm. So for our listeners, the reason I thought this was so important that we talk about it is because it is so critical for young people in this day and age to be able to give good answers. In the past, when the culture was predominantly Christian oriented, right? In the 1970s, over 90% of people claimed to have a Christian worldview. Today, we're down to about 65% making that claim. And so we're in a culture that's far more hostile, far more skeptical than ever before. And for that reason, it's more important than ever before that young people are able to dialogue over these issues and talk intelligently about them. And then Elijah, how many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have four brothers and sisters. The oldest is, she's my sister. She's in her 30s. And then comes a brother. He's almost 30. And then my wonderful, beautiful sister, Caitlin. And then in between us is another wonderful, beautiful sister, Emily.
Okay, he's got the godly compliments down here. That's awesome. That's great. So, Caitlin, tell us a little bit about your journey. You were in speech and debate as well, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I competed in high school for 4 years, and speech and debate just took me from being a very shy, reserved person who I would not be talking to most people that I talk to today. Just very shy, intimidated, starting conversations. Loved talking with people about God, but was so scared starting conversations that I didn't often get the chance to. And it just took me from that to someone who was able to actually have conversations with people about politics issues, and who is more confident talking about my faith. And so just competing for 4 years, doing both speech and the debate topics, really helped me just become more confident in sharing my faith.
Oh, that's a wonderful plug right there for speech and debate, because so many people are afraid of public speaking, and not just when it comes to apologetics, but just talking to people in general. Like you said, that is a really valuable skill to be able to speak in front of people, regardless of what your career is and what you're doing. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Caitlin, now you are actually interested in apologetics. I know Elijah is also, but this is something that you want to make it a lifelong pursuit, is apologetics. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm studying in college. I'm a biblical and theological studies major right now, and I'm studying to become an apologist. I absolutely love it.
Wow, that's so neat. So what is it that caused you to decide, this is something that I want to, and for those of you who are listening, I know I take it for granted sometimes that people know what apologetics is, but I've learned that I shouldn't do that, because the word is not common among, out and about. And it comes from a Greek word, apologia. It means to defend, for those of you who are listening. And so specifically apologetics deals with defending or answering the tough questions people have about God and the Bible. Caitlin, what caused you to decide that you wanted to pursue apologetics specifically?
Yeah, what got me into apologetics initially was the creation debate. I read a book by Lawrence Richards called It Couldn't Just Happen. And that really just introduced me to the difference between special and general revelation, and God's love and care and power were just so impressed upon me by this new world of apologetics that I was introduced to. It was just like a very clear moment where I just knew that's what I was supposed to do. God has given me the passion for it. He, through speech and debate, he has equipped me and given me the skills I'm going to need for it. And just as I've studied more about it, gotten into other issues like the problem of evil or pro-life apologetics. The thing that really draws me towards apologetics is everyone is hurting. Everyone has questions about God. Everyone has a reason that they're not coming to God. I would argue it's not a good reason, because God is goodness himself. But everyone has a reason that they will not come to God. And apologetics is the way that Christians are able to help people identify what that reason is and walk with them as they overcome it.
That's fantastic. Now, when it comes to the debate aspect here of apologetics, Caitlin, are you still a part of debate? Is that something that stopped with high school? Is that something that continues in college? How does that work?
Yeah, I actually started the debate club at my university. I go to Arizona Christian University, and I am the president of the debate club here. I also am the apologetics mentor for my brother Elijah's current high school speech and debate club. So I still get to teach apologetics there, and it is the highlight of my week whenever I get to teach there. And so, yeah, I have stayed connected and absolutely love it.
That is fantastic. And in college, you said you're still involved in debate in college. Do you actually, I'm sure people are curious, because you don't typically hear about this out and about. In public high schools, there's not a lot of discussion over debate competitions or debate teams or this sort of thing. Give us a snapshot of what it looks like to be in that world. And I know you actually are competing, just like in a competition, like, different sports teams, except it's over, who's going to win a debate. Tell us a little bit about that. What happens in high school? Do you go to other schools and then begin debating? And what does a debate competition look like?
Yeah, I like how you likened it to kind of like playing soccer or going to dance tournaments or different things like that that people usually do in high school. I like to joke that speech and debate is the mental Olympics. And so it's basically that you're going out of town to tournaments, either another town close by. We go to several tournaments here in Arizona. We also compete a lot in California. So it's definitely a sport where you can either compete locally or you can compete nationally. There's a lot of flexibility for that, depending on what works best for your family. And then once you're at a tournament, it's usually 2 to 3 days long, where you compete in the morning until the evening. You have different rounds going throughout the day. So you might have a Lincoln Douglas or team policy debate round in the morning. And then the next round is a speech round. And then the third round of the day is a parliamentary debate round. And then another speech round. And so it just kind of has that structure to it of where if you choose to do a lot of events, you might be go, go, go all the day. That is my brother right here. We call him the unicorn sometimes because he's special and very refined. That's what my aunt calls him. So,
That's great.
many students who are just trying to get their feet wet or it's not their passion, they prefer sports or different things like that, but still compete. Maybe they do one or two events. And so it's not as intense a day for them. So speech and debate really is well suited for families of any kind or any commitment level because of those different aspects.
There's a lot of flexibility there. That's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Elijah, for those of who are just listening, you can't see Caitlin and Elijah, but they're both dressed very nicely right now. And Elijah has a suit and tie on, actually. What's going on here, Elijah? Why do you dress up so nice? Other than that, this is a fantastic opportunity for you, and you're a responsible young man. What does this have to do with speech and debate?
Well, in speech and debate, since it's also a sport, but it's also intellectual. And so that combines with you're at a tournament, but you're also wearing a suit all day. And so since it's a more professional sport in that sense, this is what I would call tournament attire. I'm wearing a dress shirt, a tie, blazers, and you can't see, but under the table, I'm wearing slacks. And
You could have worn shorts and we would never have known.
I could have worn shorts and bunny slippers. No one would have ever known.
That's right.
But yeah, so this is what I would wake up at 5 a.m. and put on and then go to a tournament and compete in.
Oh, you're going to scare people off saying wake up at 5 a.m. Jeez, man. Okay, so that's
Because
great.
yes.
Because they're far away. That's right. Good save there, Caitlin. That's not great. So Elijah, how many debates do you participate in, in a school year?
Oh, well, that depends on how many tournaments we go to. Generally, each tournament you'll have six debates, and then if you do really well, you will advance to semifinals or finals. And so, one tournament I had 10 rounds in just one form of debate. And so,
How
all
many
things
tournaments per year would you say? Just a rough idea.
at least 10, generally, more than that.
And
And so,
how many years have you been doing this, Elijah?
I'm going into my sixth year.
6th year. That is incredible. I just can't imagine the amount of, and tell us this because this is really curious. I mean, this is like an education in and of itself, in which it takes a lot of preparation for the debates. And so you're actually learning about a lot of subjects in the process of preparing for these debates. So it's a whole nother level of education almost. Tell us what does it look like for you, Elijah, when you begin to prepare? And I'm assuming that you know ahead of time what you're going to be debating and the position that you're going to be debating. Do you debate the side that you actually believe in, or do you ever have to debate a side that you actually don't believe in? And then I'm asking kind of a two-part question here, but I'm really curious what kind of preparation, how many hours goes into preparing to debate and, the resources that you have. Do you have to remember everything, or are you able to use notes in during the debate? So I asked you like a whole bunch of questions there all at once. I apologize. So
No worries.
go ahead and pick up wherever you like on those questions.
Yeah, so that's a great point. So before the debate begins, you get what we call a resolution. Basically, it's just a topic. And a simplified topic would be dogs are better than cats. And then depending on how seriously you take it, you could research for 15 minutes a day, or I like to do like an hour a day. And then you prepare cases, you write out briefs, which we call, it's just arguments. And then you can bring those into the room. And so you can read from your papers, and you do have to debate both sides of the issue. And something speech and debate has taught me is that issues are much deeper than we would automatically think. Because if you just hear dogs are better than cats, you might think, yeah, that's true, cats stink. But then if you look into it and you research it more, you can find the truth in both sides that you believe in.
Wow, that's great. And that makes a lot of sense, because a lot of times, as I understand it, you know, preparing to be able to debate, you really got to put yourself in the other person's shoes and say, what are their legitimate arguments, rather than, say, straw man arguments, right? Something you've set up as an argument in your mind that's not really their position, but you've manufactured it, and you're answering questions that nobody's asking. And so would you say that that forcing yourself to have to argue both sides actually prepares you to defend your real position in real life better?
Definitely. For example, last year, the debate topic I got was about criminal justice. And when I was going into that year, my beliefs were very strong. I'm a very opinionated person. And so I believed one way, but as I began researching, my opinion started changing as I was able to see, okay, here's actually the truth of both sides, and here's what I actually believe. And I think that's the first benefit of speech and debate. It's critical thinking, whether it's researching your own side or researching the other person's side, realizing the truth in both sides. It really teaches you how to not just make straw man arguments, or not just take arguments on face value, but actually know what you believe and why you believe it.
That is fantastic. Caitlin, what are your thoughts on that as far as having to argue both sides? Have you ever felt uncomfortable having to argue a position that you totally don't agree with?
Yeah, actually, my first year doing debate was brutal, because I was used to, my experience with debate was listening to creation debates where I agreed with one side and I thought this side has the truth, the other side is deceived and does not have the truth. And so with that kind of understanding, and it was very hard for me at first to understand how can I defend both sides and believe in both sides. And so what I eventually learned was, as Elijah just said, finding the truth in both sides that I can defend. One nice thing about speech and debate is you never have to defend something you don't believe in. You're never forced into advocating for something you do not morally support. There's never a scenario where you would have to do that, preparing us to advocate for the truth, not against it. Mm-hmm. And so how I came to understand being able to debate both sides is maybe for this reason or for this value, say, this side of the debate would be better. Like one year I debated bioethics, and it was scientific advancement versus scientific restraint. And I leaned very so heavily towards scientific restraint in moral areas that I almost didn't even debate that year. But my coach encouraged me to continue debating to try and find the truth in the side for scientific advancement. And by the end of the year, I could see the truth in both sides and why this is a debate in the first place.
Wow, that is so interesting to me, because I think a big part of the problems we actually have in the broader culture is that people don't understand where other people are coming from. And so what they end up doing is they demonize the person and essentially say they're just pure evil. They're not, they have no good in them. And clearly, if they have that position, they must just be a bad person. Whereas when what you're doing is you're going, okay, they actually do have a rationale for it. And maybe it's wrong, but it's not done specifically because, you know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of Paul, where he says, do not be taken captive by hollow and deceptive philosophy. And the emphasis there is that our fight is not against flesh and blood, but against the spiritual powers and the and principalities, which really humanizes the person when we understand where they're coming from. And now what we can do is have that gentleness and respect that we might lack if we had just said straight up, they're just an evil person. And that's why they believe that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I use the word deceive too, is doing speech and debate helps you, exactly as you said, have sympathy for the person and view them as a captive, taken captive or deceived by a philosophy. And if you view someone that way, that humanizes them. You then see them as someone that you can potentially help by sharing the gospel with, and not as an enemy that you need to take out with your arguments. Yeah. Your arguments are then there to serve and love the person instead of fight them.
Boy, I am so sold on speech and debate. This is so great. We're not even done yet, right? So
we need three more reasons for speaking.
No, we're gonna keep going here. This is great. So let's see. So when you have these debates, Caitlin, and you're at the university, and do you have a say in what the debates are, or does the organization that presides over these debates, do they determine what is going to be debated each year?
Yeah, at the college level, the students do not get to decide the topics. Those are decided, and it's the same thing in the homeschool leagues as well in high school. Students don't per se get to choose. Sometimes you do get to vote on which ones you would like, but in college, they are chosen for you, and then you debate them. Again, even in that context, you don't have to argue for something you don't believe in. So if you get kind of the short end of the straw and are on the, what you might call the bad side of the resolution, or the side you don't want it to be on, look for the truth in it. I've heard of a lot of stories of college debaters who even one time got a pro, quote unquote, abortion resolution, and then they argued for aborting taxes, because technically abortion doesn't have to mean it in the sense we automatically go to of aborting
human life. That's clever.
Yeah, so that is kind of where the art of debate comes into, is reinterpreting the resolution or the topic so that you don't have to advocate for something you don't believe in. But in practice, we do get to choose the resolutions and the topics. So running the debate club here, I could choose any topic I want. I could put people on those uncomfortable sides of the resolution to give them just like a mental exercise in understanding, maybe a pro-choice side, so that they can argue against it better. But generally speaking, resolutions don't get into very political or touchy subjects like that very often.
Oh, they don't. Okay.
No, they
so
don't.
That was something else I was curious about. You know, I can see some people, maybe some parents, being concerned that with the fact that a person is typically engaging in both sides, or maybe arguing both sides, that it would weaken the convictions of the child, the student, because, you know, they're exposed to a worldview or a perspective that is not biblical. And so they go, ooh, no, I don't want my child arguing for something. And I know you said that they don't have to do it, but somebody might avoid debate altogether because they're so concerned that it's going to weaken the convictions of their children and their family's, you know, biblical worldview. Elijah, what would you say to that fear?
I would say that, like any other fear, it can make you stop and say, oh, wow, speech and debate, that's so bad. But then when you actually look at what speech and debate is, the organizers of the leagues try really hard to make sure that that fear never actually happens. And so the resolution that I had about criminal justice, it was saying, should criminal justice use rehabilitation or retribution, restitution, or deterrence, other forms of punishment? And so those aren't like super moral issues where there's one side is always correct. And so I was able to debate from both standpoints, knowing this is the truth in this side and this is the truth in this side. And I was very intentional about never debating something I didn't definitely believe in.
So you were able to identify the areas where you felt you needed to protect your perspective. I mean, is there something to that? I'm just curious, like, from your perspective, having done so many debates, Do you feel that there is an actual danger in where you draw a line and you go, no, I can't argue this because I feel like I would actually be violating my conscience in if I actually argued that perspective, Elijah?
I would say that there are instances where that can happen, but in those instances, I just choose, I won't argue for that then. And so that's also something that speech and debate teaches you. It teaches you to be strong in your opinions, that I now know I don't have to ever advocate for something I don't believe in. The confidence I have in speech and debate actually equips me that maybe it means I will lose a debate round, but I'm going to maintain my integrity in the process.
Okay, and I would also add to that, that speech and debate helps you discover what are those boundaries you're not willing to cross, because you often don't realize what convictions you're not willing to give up until you are faced with having to choose not to argue a certain way. And so speech and debate has definitely done that for us. It has not only helped us know what we believe, why we believe it, and communicate it, but also stand for it when the time comes. And so speech and debate really equips you to stand strong in your faith and your convictions. And the organizations understand that speech and debaters are very moral people, that we have a lot of convictions about a lot of different things. So they try very hard to not bring up resolutions that would put someone in a position where they'd have to compromise their morals and advocate for something that they'll believe in. So while that happens, it's only once in the blue moon.
So along those lines, you know, would you say that the bulk of the people that are engaged in speech and debate are homeschool families, or is this something that's very prevalent outside of the homeschool community as well? And I'm talking specifically in like high school and so forth. Is that primarily homeschool families that are doing that, or do public schools do a lot of public schools have speech and debate teams? High schools?
Yeah, it definitely is not a homeschool dominated sport. There are other leagues. We're more familiar with the homeschool ones because we were homeschooled. But it definitely is something that if you were in private school or if you were in public school, you can find a league. I think one of the difficulties is that there is a lack at the moment for a Christian public and private school league that would allow these students to come in and have an experience like we had, where it was overtly Christian. You can still be a Christian in a secular league. It is just a little bit more difficult to not have, you have to be more intentional about bringing in the biblical integration and worldview training by really studying that a little bit extra than you might in a homeschool league, where it's kind of part of what you do already. So if anyone is interested in looking for that in a couple of years, our speech and debate coach, Julie Fritz, is actually creating that league and will be hosting a tournament probably next year.
Oh, that's fantastic. And tell us your coach's website.
It's fritzspeech.com. Fritz is spelled F-R-I-T-Z.
Great. So for those of you maybe who are just tuning in or just listening in, we're talking about speech and debate today with Elijah and Caitlin Walker. And this is a really important topic in my opinion, because the Bible has all kinds of examples of debate. And I love it. You know, in the past, apologetics and maybe debate got a bad rap because people said, look, you're just causing conflict. You're creating arguments. People are getting hostile. And I even remember when I was younger, sometimes I would debate with friends, not because I was part of speech and debate, but I went to a public high school and I was an outspoken Christian. And I naturally got in a lot of interesting conversation, but I could feel my blood pressure rising during some of the conversations, because, you know, if you hold a position and it's very personal, it's meaningful to you. And so it's easy to get kind of riled up. And one of the things I think that the Bible emphasizes is the need to stay calm, right? And to not take it as a personal attack because somebody disagrees with you. And this is something our culture is struggling horribly with, is that everybody is so, you say one thing that somebody disagrees with and people just, you know, throw these massive temper tantrums and go out of control, and then they just start calling people names, and you lose all ability to have a civil discussion about with people that disagree. And so this is such a valuable skill to be able to do that. I wanted to read a quick verse for those of you who, you know, believe in the Bible and trust the Bible when it comes to its position on issues, that the Bible actually encourages debate. This is one of my favorite examples of this. This is in Acts chapter 18, verses 27 to 28. It says, "When Apollos resolved to cross over to Achaia, the brothers encouraged him and wrote to the disciples there to welcome him. On his arrival, he was a great help to those who by grace had believed, for he powerfully refuted the Jews in public debate, proving from the scriptures that Jesus is the Christ." And I think that when I first read that, I thought that was so cool because I was just like, oh man, that guy just stood up in front of everybody and debated these people and convinced people that Christ was who he said he was. And I was like in the middle of that in my public high school. And I was like, oh man, this has been going on for a long time. This is fantastic. So along those same lines for you guys, has debating helped you with the whole emotional thing? Because I know that's a struggle for a lot of people where they just start to lose their cool. How has that impacted you, Caitlin?
It has helped me so much. First off, it's given me the confidence to even start a conversation and not letting my shyness and the fear, those emotions run the train. So I have been able to push through fear of starting conversations with people about God. I even did that over the summer. Was able to have worldview conversations with people who did not believe in Christ. And I would not have had the confidence to do that if I had not done this. If I had not competed in speech and debate, I just simply wouldn't have been able to. But not only that, when actually being in conversations, I'm able to separate my emotions from the person and their logic. I now have three different categories that I'm working with. My emotions can then take a back seat because I realize what's most important is dealing with the person's logic so that I can win their heart. And so that is really what speech and debate teaches you to do really well, is to set aside your emotions for the time being. If they're applicable and helpful, definitely to bring them in and use them well to show someone empathy and care and love. But if you are starting to notice that you're getting a little bit heated, knowing that you are arguing in an idea to win the person is really what helps you keep those emotions in check and focus on actually the task at hand of winning someone over.
You said something really interesting there. You said that you're focused on their logic. And can you break that down for us? What do you mean by that when you say you're focused on their logic? What is it that you're looking at?
Yeah, I'm looking for, when I start a conversation with someone, what are some assumptions that they have about God or about my faith or about even their own faith that is impacting how they view God and how they're interacting with me? For example, over the summer, I started a conversation with someone who was Hindu, but he also identified as a Hindu Christian. And I was just like, what do you mean by that? Asking him what that meant for him. And so he started talking, of course, about oneness. And eventually he started talking about being divine. And I asked if he believed that he was God. And he said, yes, I do. You're God too. And at that moment, I could have gotten completely offended and said, no, there's only one God, and he's Jesus Christ. But I would have probably lost this man if I had done that. So I was able to remain calm, even though it was uncomfortable, and simply say, no, I'm not God, Jesus is. And from there, work more on his logic of, okay, why do you think that you're God? What about all of this do you persuades you to believe this? And from there, we were able to start getting to more about his view of oneness, and that he thinks that he was broken off from the divine and he needs to get back to it. I would not have understood that unless I had focused on his logic and asked questions and checked my emotions and kind of submitted them to the patience and the questions that I needed at that moment to actually continue the conversation with him.
That's great. So how would you define the word logic, Elijah? What for our listeners, we hear the word tossed around quite a bit, but what is the actual definition of the word logic?
I would say logic is reasoning. And so you look at a bunch of assumptions, a bunch of facts, and then from those you say, well, if this is true and this is true, therefore this must be true. And so you take all that information and you process it through reasoning, and that action is logic.
Mm. Would you say that in our culture today, you know, and you guys are debating so many different issues, so obviously you're well aware of what's happening in the culture as a whole. I think that's another huge benefit to speech and debate, is that you're constantly kind of on the cutting edge of what's happening in the culture, because those are the issues that are brought into to discuss in a lot of ways. Would you say that, do you feel that our culture as a whole is suffering from a lack of logic or a lack of the ability to reason? Elijah?
I definitely would. If we just look at the world around us today, people are taking things on face value. They're saying, I know this is true because I read it on the comments of YouTube. And in fact, Carnegie Mellon University says that students lack an important component of critical thinking. And broader than that, people are asking questions of what is a woman? And so I think our culture just doesn't know how to think anymore because we've abandoned logic and we've abandoned reasoning.
Mm-hmm. Caitlin, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, absolutely. Like Elijah was talking about, just the confusion over self-evident truths. They're not self-evident to people anymore. People are doubting truth at the most fundamental level. And while there's nothing wrong with doubt per se, it's the disbelief that's the problem. People are so rejecting truth and logic and saying that their emotions or how they feel about a certain topic is what is true about it, that we're very greatly lacking actual conversation anymore. And so one of the ways that speech and debate really helps you handle that is by being the non-emotional person in the room and getting to help work through somebody else's emotions with them, being calm and asking questions, because if someone else is reactionary, you can't be reactionary, because then you're not going to get anywhere. Logic has left the building if you let your emotions run the train.
That's great. That's great counsel. You know, I feel like logic is the common ground that two people that disagree have, because that's how you are able to work out those differences of opinion and find out why you hold the different views. But once we lose logic, we lose all common ground to even have a discussion. And I almost, you know, I think it's spiritual, honestly. I think that this is makes the devil extremely happy when people can no longer even talk to each other. And you're in a situation where that common ground is completely gone. And now all you have left is anger, emotions, and frequently physical violence, because mm-hmm. people have decided we're no longer even going to talk through the issues or try to understand somebody else, which most definitely then the devil's won when we can no longer try to work these out like the Bible teaches us. So in the real world, you know, when you go out and about and you're having these conversations like you did, Caitlin, like you were talking about, how do you see this playing out in your future as far as where is a career in apologetics going to go? And with your background in debate and speech, do you have a vision for the future as far as how that's going to flesh out?
Yeah, right now I'm studying for my master's. I'm hoping to get that by the end of 3 more years in school. So I'm very excited. But beyond that, I would love to work with a ministry. One of my favorites is Stand to Reason. Another one is Summit Ministries. Those are my two favorites.
Yeah, those are awesome.
To be able to do teaching or public speaking or writing for one of those ministries.
That is wonderful. What about you, Elijah? What do you have a vision for the future?
I do. So I want to be a businessman. I want to be an entrepreneur. And I know that the skills I've learned in speech and debate of being able to think and express that is going to help me there. Mm-hmm. But I also have it on my heart to, like, I love the Lord with all my heart. And so I want to serve him. And so somewhere in ministry where I can get involved in that to promote his kingdom, that's also what I have in mind for my future.
That is fantastic. Oh, I love that. And again, you know, we were talking off air a little bit beforehand, and you mentioned some organizations that if people are listening and they want to get involved with speech and debate, You said STOA, I believe, was one of the organizations. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so STOA is the National Christian Homeschool Speech and Debate League that my family has been a part of for 5 years. And this is a league that has clubs all over the nation. And so for whoever's listening, if you're interested in speech and debate, you can go to stoausa.org, and they have a list of all of the clubs, where they are, and you can get resources and information and get plugged in there. That's actually how my family got involved in speech and debate. We were at a homeschool convention in Arizona and we saw a booth and my mom was like, I'm doing this. And since that day, honestly, that has been an amazing blessing for me and my family.
Yeah, that's, I would say, one of the big days that our family and our lives changed.
Yeah,
that is definitely a significant marker in our just spiritual and personal growth, and has also really knit our family together as well.
Yes.
I have another question that just popped into my head for families that are listening now, and are, I'm sure there are many people that are very excited because they're hearing what you're saying. They're hearing your vision for the future, and it's a powerful testimony. But how much time do you have to dedicate per week? I know you said there's flexibility, but if a family was like, okay, look, we want to get our feet wet, what's a minimum commitment time-wise in order for mom and a dad, right? Because they've got to be driving people around and they've got to be doing these sorts of things. What would you say is a minimum time commitment to be involved in something like this?
Yeah, I would say on average clubs meet once a week. That could be anywhere from maybe like 2 or 3 hours, maybe a little bit longer. Our club used to meet a little bit longer than that just because there was a scheduled dinner break in there. If you meet during the day, it might be a little bit shorter. And so just once a week, there's a scheduled club time that you would attend. Some clubs are drop-off. Some clubs require parents to attend. And so it just depends on the club in your area. And if you don't have a club in your area, you could go onto STOA's website and they have resources if you would be interested in starting one. Beyond that, it really just depends on how serious you want to take speech and debate and how much your child wants to compete or how much you want to require that they put into it. One good suggestion is treat it like a normal class, like one of your child's subjects. So if they work on math for an hour, have them work on speech and debate for an hour. They can give a 5-minute impromptu speech and then work on an apologetics speech for 10 minutes and then give it to you. That might take 20 minutes altogether. And then the rest of the time, have them be researching and for debate. And then the next day, spend an hour, they call their friend and they actually do a debate. So it is really flexible on how much you want your child to do. You might have them do 15 minutes a day starting out, just impromptu speeches. It gets maybe longer as they show more interest. And it might get to somewhere like Elijah might spend an hour on debate one day and then practices his speeches for 2 hours. So it really just depends.
Okay, that's great. Great information. And again, your coach's website, fritzspeech.com, F-R-I-T-Z, speech.com. If anybody listening would like to get encouragement or support, and you said that your coach is actually starting a new type of speech and debate league. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And that's specifically to connect private Christian schools with homeschools? Is that what you were saying? Or what were you saying about that?
Her vision is that right now STOA is homeschoolers only league. And she was just thinking, wow, it is such an amazing league. Why are only homeschoolers allowed in it? Why isn't there something for public schoolers and private schoolers to also be a part of? And so her vision is to get it to be something where students could maybe go to their church or at their school and be part of a league like STOA, but that is open to different school types. And so she'll be launching that within the next year. So keep an eye out for that. And also in the meantime, you can go to STOA or NCFCA. Those are two different homeschooler leagues right now.
Okay, great. Well, you guys, you've been very impressive, I must say. So I just want to thank you so much for being on the program, and it's been a big blessing having you. I think a lot of people will be blessed to be able to hear, your testimony of how this has impacted your life. It's a big blessing, and I'm praying that God continues to bless you guys. You obviously seem to me like you're going to do very well. So praise God for that fact. It's really exciting to see what you're doing and where you're headed. So we'll stay in touch, and we'll continue to maybe I'll see you at the Arizona Homeschool Convention next year, and we can yeah. Say hi.
Yes.
Grab a coffee or something, or maybe we can debate. We can.
I'll start prepping now.
Yeah,
let's do it, Mr. Conover versus Elijah.
See you. That'd be great.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Okay, you guys, you've been a big blessing, and for those of you listening, we have some real exciting interviews coming up right around the corner. We've had a lot of good shows. Dr. Julie Hayden's going to be with us next week, and we're specifically dealing with the homeless crisis in California. What does the Bible have to say about that, and how do we deal with it? How do we address it? We also have Larry Blythe coming from Apologia, the ministry. He's an expert on debating evolution and atheism. Incredible testimony that he has. We have Dr. Jeremy Lyon coming up on the Dead Sea Scrolls. That's going to be really interesting, and creation, and a variety of other really fantastic guests around the corner. So I hope I'll see you next week. And thanks for being here. I hope you have a great week. God bless you, and we'll see you next time.